Hello and welcome to this podcast, brought to you by K2 Animal Health Publishing and sponsored by Hill's Pet Nutrition Canada. Founded more than 75 years ago, Hill's mission is to help enrich and lengthen the special relationships between people and their pets. Hill's is dedicated to pioneering research and groundbreaking nutrition for dogs and cats based on a scientific understanding of their specific needs. Today we'll be talking about allergic dermatitis and 10 treatments and considerations veterinarians need to know to help them in their practices. We have two experts in veterinary dermatology with us here today, Dr. Douglas DeBoer and Dr. Stephen Weglass. They're going to explore this topic and to share some tips for effective treatment of dogs that present with allergic skin disease. Dr. Douglas DeBoer is a diplomat of the American College of Veterinary Dermatology and a professor of dermatology at the University of Wisconsin School of Veterinary Medicine. His interests focus on applied clinical research in the area of allergy and staphylococcal skin infection and identifying improvements that can be made in diagnostic tests for allergy and new allergy treatments. Dr. DeBoer recently presented at the Ontario Veterinary Medical Association conference on what you need to know about allergic dermatitis, the topic of today's podcast. Dr. Stephen Weglass is a diplomat of the American College of Veterinary Dermatology. He's an adjunct professor in the Department of Clinical Studies at the Ontario Veterinary College and has lectured to veterinary and technician groups internationally in the field of veterinary dermatology. As well, he is a dermatology consultant for veterinarians on the Veterinary Information Network internet site and a dermatologist with two dermatology referral centers in the Greater Toronto area. Welcome to you both, and thank you for participating in this podcast. We'll now hand over the reins to Dr. DeBoer.
Thanks very much for that introduction, Sheila. And today we're going to talk about allergic skin disease. There's an awful lot of talk about the pathogenesis of allergic skin disease and what it all involves. And there's some new things that will affect your ability to diagnose and treat allergic skin disease, including secondary things like skin infections and so forth. We always talk about taking a multimodal treatment approach to allergic skin disease. And so we're going to talk about many of those elements and the options that are available to us. So at this point, I'd like to welcome Dr. Weglass to the conversation.
Hello, Dr. DeBoer. Thank you very much for inviting me. So Dr. DeBoer had a few questions for you regarding allergies in dogs. My first one is about the Janus kinases. Control of the Janus kinases, or JAKs, are an interesting therapeutic option. Dr. DeBoer, can you tell us a little bit about them and how they can be used to treat skin allergies in dogs?
Sure. Well, the Janus kinases are, as you said, a really interesting new target for drug development. And the Janus kinases, or JAKs, are enzymes that form a basic way that cells transmit signals. Typically, they're part of a receptor. So they're part of the triggering mechanism, a receptor on a cell membrane. And there's tremendous development of drugs that target these receptors. For the purposes of allergic dermatitis, what we have to say is that the cytokines, many different cytokines, are responsible for triggering the itch response. And in particular, there's a cytokine called interleukin 31, or IL-31, and that's really a key cytokine in causing itch. And the connection here is that the IL-31 uses a receptor, and that receptor uses the JAK pathway. So these JAK inhibitor drugs disrupt that pathway and thereby disrupt the itch response. Now, of course, the good news for us is that we have a JAK inhibitor drug, Apoquel, made by Zoetis or Ocrelizumab, and that is a drug that's very rapidly controlling pruritus. It's been a tremendous drug for us to use in the United States for allergic dermatitis.
That's great. It's fascinating. Actually, there is good news on the horizon in Canada. As a member of the Zoetis Dermatology Advisory Board, I got some Apoquel just last week and understand pretty soon it's going to be available to the general veterinary population in Canada. That'll be a big help. There's other therapies, that unfortunately, that are not yet available in Canada. One is monoclonal antibodies. They're sometimes used to treat allergic dermatitis in the States. I understand that they are a new and interesting option, but they have to be rendered caninized or felinized so that they can deal specifically with the canine or feline immune system. Can you tell us a little bit about recent research about for allergic pruritus and immunotherapy?
Well, the immunotherapeutics or biologic therapies are not drugs. They're not chemical drugs. They're typically large proteins or peptide molecules. And the biggest example of those is monoclonal antibody therapy, as you say. And many of us may be familiar with these because they've been on the market for treatment of human conditions for a long time to treat diseases like rheumatoid arthritis and psoriasis and so forth. Now, the technology that's used or that has been used to develop these for human medicine is now being applied to veterinary medicine and specifically in the case of skin disease, we have in the States a monoclonal antibody that is directed against interleukin 31, IL-31. And if you recall, we discussed that IL-31 was a key cytokine in itch, and the drug ocrelizumab interferes with that IL-31 signaling pathway. In the case of the monoclonal antibody, what we're actually doing is injecting an antibody that's against the IL-31 and basically wiping it out of the circulation and tissues. So kind of another approach to eliminating IL-31 and its associated itch response. And as you said, there's a lot of genetic engineering that goes into that because if we were to inject an antibody that was not a dog antibody, there would be an immunologic reaction against that antibody. And so the engineering that has to take place is to turn that antibody into something that looks just like a dog antibody so it's not eliminated from the circulation by an immunologic reaction. So it's a fascinating concept and something that we're going to see increasingly in veterinary medicine.
Fascinating. That's very exciting news. As you mentioned before, allergic skin disease is a major initiator of secondary bacterial and yeast infections, and in the last 10 years or so, veterinary dermatologists have been at the forefront in the battle against these superbugs. In fact, in a study that we performed at our facility, over 40% of patients had evidence of a superbug when they had skin infection. That's pretty scary. How are dermatologists dealing with these patients?
You're exactly right. I think worldwide we're seeing an increase in these methicillin-resistant staphylococci. And one of the new concepts we have, actually it's not really a new concept, but it's rediscovery of an old concept, and that's the use of topical therapy. Now, we're used to using or thinking of topical therapy as an adjunct treatment, in other words, something that we use along with an antibiotic. But now, with the emergence of these superbugs, we're thinking about topical therapy as a primary treatment. In other words, a way to actually treat the disease without using antibiotics. The way that this is being done, first of all, it really works only for superficial pyoderma. With a deep pyoderma, antibiotics are still necessary. So superficial pyoderma, and the key here is getting that topical product on, that antimicrobial on daily. So we're not talking about twice a week shampoo, we're talking about daily application. And because it would be difficult for most donors to shampoo their pet daily, we're thinking about using an easier way to get it on more frequently, and that would be a spray or a mousse or a gel or some kind of leave-on conditioner or something that makes it very easy for the client to apply daily. So especially in mild cases, moderate cases of superficial pyoderma, where it might be, for example, regional on the dog, using a topical product daily for 3 to 6 weeks really works very well as primary treatment. Now, as far as what to use, most research has been done with chlorhexidine. So chlorhexidine is the active ingredient that we like to use. It doesn't really matter the formulation, anywhere between 2 and 4% chlorhexidine. As a shampoo, as a spray, as a gel, whatever is easiest for the owner to apply daily. And using that instead of antibiotics is going to help us out in the long term to prevent increasing antimicrobial resistance. So when you see superficial pyoderma, think topical first.
Well, that's great information. Thank you. I wanted to move to the topic of food allergies and food intolerances. You know, food hypersensitivity is the third most common cause of allergic skin disease. And as an expert in the field, can you tell us what the best way to manage or deal or diagnose food allergies would be for our food allergic pets?
Well, there's not much that's changed there. Our diagnostic method is still the diagnostic method of choice. The gold standard is a dietary restriction provocation trial, also commonly known as a hypoallergenic diet trial. This can be done with a hydrolyzed protein-based diet. It can be done with a novel ingredient diet. But the important thing is that it's done very, very strictly. We have to have 100% compliance by the client. That's often the most difficult thing to do. One of the new things, though, is the finding that many, and perhaps even most, pet foods that an owner might acquire at a pet store, so sort of quote-unquote pet store brands, actually do contain traces of ingredients that are not on the label. And these, for example, it was discovered that many of the venison and potato-based diets or venison-based diets that you might find in a pet store contain traces of beef or other allergens. And of course, this makes it not satisfactory for a diet trial. These contaminants, if you will, occur in the processing of the food, and they're in trace amounts, but nevertheless, this means that we cannot depend on pet store brands for use in, as a hypoallergenic diet trial. The owner must use one of the veterinary prescription, quote-unquote, brands, or the veterinarian-available brands. And in that case, those the companies do take very, very careful precautions to make sure there are no traces or contaminants of non-permitted ingredients in the foods. So even though there's no clear indication whether or not you should use a hydrolyzed protein diet such as Hill's ZD or a novel protein diet, we know that it has to be strict. We know that it must be at least a month or two. Finally, it's very important if the pet does improve to challenge with the original diet and demonstrate that the skin disease recurs.
That's impressive information. It's really important for us to be able to get that across to our clients that we need to feed the proper diet, because if we miss a food allergy, we may never make them better. And so following up with a veterinary diet, I think, is a really good plan. I wanted to move on to cyclosporins a little bit. They're another class of drug that's used to treat allergic skin disease. How do they differ from steroids? What is cyclosporins and how are they used?
Well, cyclosporin is a more targeted drug. It works by inhibiting the action of some of the cytokines, such as interleukins. And we know that it has great efficacy for many pets. It has a long-term safety record. But there have been some problems with cyclosporin, especially things like the slow onset of action. It often can take 2 or 3 or 4 weeks before we see much relief from the pet. There are also some adverse effects. Most veterinarians are familiar with the gastrointestinal adverse effects, GI disturbances such as vomiting and diarrhea. Those occur in quite a few dogs, but fortunately in most dogs they're transient. One of the less commonly known adverse effects of cyclosporin is gingival hyperplasia, that is a swelling or proliferation of the gingival tissue, which can create halitosis and dental disease. Fortunately, this is an effect that is reversible if it's stopped, but it can really create some substantial dental disease. And of course, if the cyclosporin is stopped, then you have the allergic dermatitis recur. So cyclosporin is a great drug for treating allergic dermatitis. One of the new things is a way of combining cyclosporin with short-term prednisone or prednisolone to have a quicker action. In other words, we want to get over that problem of it taking 2 weeks or more to have an effect. So what we do, dermatologists are using cyclosporin, and at the same time you start the cyclosporin, you start a two-week, and I want to stress two-week only, tapering course of prednisone or prednisolone. That way you get an immediate effect from the prednisone. The dog gets better very, very quickly. And then after about 2 weeks, the prednisone stops, and by that time the cyclosporin will have started to become effective. It's just a way that you can create a quicker therapeutic effect. I would like to stress, though, that using cyclosporin plus a oral corticosteroid longer term is something that shouldn't be done, because we have seen opportunistic infections from that situation.
So that might decrease the initial phone calls from the clients that the cyclosporins aren't working, but you don't want to do that long term. That's great information. Looking more to other things, are there any natural type of treatments that we might be able to use? Our clients are really looking for things like they'll talk about fatty acid supplementation, things along that line. Is there benefit to that in the itchy pet?
Well, the essential fatty acid supplements are really a great thing. In the case of atopic dermatitis, we often say that we'd really like every dog with atopic dermatitis to receive a fatty acid supplement. They have multiple actions in this disease. They do have some anti-inflammatory effects. They are weak, but they're there. Possibly, also, we know that they likely have some effects on epidermal barrier function. And perhaps most importantly, we know from studies that essential fatty acids are synergistic with other medications, such as antihistamines, such as corticosteroids, and even cyclosporin. So if you have a pet taking an essential fatty acid supplement, you can get by with less of the other medications. And of course, that saves not only on adverse effects, but saves on expense to the owner. The important thing with the essential fatty acid supplements, though, is that the dog get the right dose of the right fatty acids. We want to use the anti-inflammatory fatty acids, EPA, GLA, DHA, and we want to use a dose of these that's at least 25 milligrams per kilogram per day. And that's often difficult to tell from a supplement whether or not that dose is achieved of those fatty acids. So it's important to get the right amounts. It's important to get the right fatty acids. And one of the newer trends in pet food is that some pet foods are being now supplemented with these anti-inflammatory fatty acids at high doses that are within the therapeutic range for dogs. So diets such as Hill's Derm Defense, we know that that diet contains the correct amounts of the correct fatty acids. And the advantage there of using a diet is that the owner has to feed the dog every day anyway. So we know that as long as that diet is fed, the dog is getting those fatty acids. The owner doesn't have to purchase a separate supplement. They don't have to remember to give the supplement. They're automatically giving this when they feed the dog. So we have problems with owners sometimes picking up supplements like salmon oil or coconut oil or other oils that, although technically they're oil supplements, they don't contain the correct fatty acids. So it is very important what they're actually feeding or giving as a supplement.
That makes a lot of sense. It's a lot easier to have something in the food than to put things on the food anyway. So that makes a lot of sense to me. I guess at the risk of making myself seem too old, when I was in vet school, we called this disease allergic inhalant dermatitis. In fact, I would tell people their dogs had AIDS, and we don't do that anymore. The talk now is about epidermal barrier function. So maybe you can tell us a little bit about the importance of epidermal barrier function and the role that that plays in skin disease in dogs.
Epidermal barrier function, you're right, that's kind of a new concept in allergic skin disease. We used to believe that allergic dermatitis was primarily a disease of the immune system, an overreaction of the immune system, and certainly that's involved. But in more recent years, we know, especially from studies in people, that the epidermis itself can be defective in allergic dermatitis. In other words, the epidermal barrier is leaky. The skin is leaky so that allergens and irritants can penetrate the skin easier than in a normal person or a normal dog. So that's why emollients are terribly important as a basic element of treatment for human atopic dermatitis. If you're using emollients, definitely results in patient improvement. So the question we have is, we know this is really important for people. Is the same thing true for dogs? So we're talking about topical modification of barrier function with some of the topical sprays or shampoos or these spot-on oil-type products. And the studies are really more or less in their early stages in pets. So I think it's very important if something is being advertised as a product that improves barrier function, that we always ask the company, have they done a study, and show us the data to demonstrate that their particular product is really effective in the clinic.
You know, people take antihistamines all the time for their allergies, and what about using antihistamines in dogs?
Well, I think anybody that's been in practice and treated allergic dogs with antihistamines knows that they just don't seem to help very much. And the evidence is that the antihistamines, including the newer non-sedating antihistamines that are used in human medicine, they just don't have much effect on the pruritic response in dogs. They may work a little bit in early disease or for dogs that are very mild, but they certainly aren't going to do anything great. And unfortunately, there's nothing new on that horizon that's going to be magical as far as a treatment, other than the fact that if antihistamines are used, we know that they probably will work better if the dog is on a fatty acid supplement, because there's some synergism there.
Great. So that's one way to try to look at them. You know, we've been spending a lot of time talking about dogs, but we don't want to forget about our cat patients. I know I see a lot of cats that are fur mowers. They overgroom to the point of licking themselves bald, or they have sores. Can you discuss some of the major causes of feline self-trauma that we have to deal with?
Well, I tell you, cats are mysterious in many ways, and with allergy, it's no different. Allergy in cats is still mostly a diagnosis of exclusion. More common causes of itchiness and fur mowing, as you say, in cats are things like infections and parasites and so forth. So those things have to be ruled out first. And then we have to consider after that whether the cat might have a food-related allergy or an environmental allergy. And that's pretty much a diagnosis of exclusion, initially using a diet trial to eliminate food allergy. And then in the end, if we've eliminated every other cause of itch, we say that it is possible that that cat has environmental allergy. Unfortunately, the situation in cats is that we don't have very good diagnostic criteria for knowing exactly what constitutes an allergic cat. In dogs, we actually have some really good criteria to help us in our diagnosis, but cats seem to manifest allergy in many different ways. As you say, fur mowing, eosinophilic granuloma, bald belly or ventral symmetrical alopecia. There's all kinds of different manifestations. So the bottom line is, allergy is still a diagnosis of exclusion in cats. We also know that as with dogs, the allergy tests, and this would include either serologic tests or intradermal tests, are not tests for allergy. They are tests that we use after we make a diagnosis of allergy. We know this because many normal individuals, both cats and dogs, can have some positive allergy tests without clinical significance. So allergy is a clinical diagnosis, and these tests, quote unquote allergy tests, should be used only after the diagnosis is made in preparation for using immunotherapy as a form of treatment.
Oh, so immunotherapy, you mentioned immunotherapy. Maybe we could explore that a little bit. I know that allergen-specific immunotherapy or allergy treatment is a large component in the arsenal that the veterinary dermatologist has, for example, in the treatment of allergies. And allergy injections have been a kind of a standard of care for many years, but there's a new and interesting option called sublingual immunotherapy, or SLIT. Dr. DeBoer, can you tell us a little bit about SLIT?
Well, SLIT or sublingual immunotherapy is a new way of administering the allergen-specific immunotherapy. And actually, it's not a new way. It's been used for a long time in Europe for treatment of human allergies. And its use in dogs is more recent. Sublingual immunotherapy, very simply, is the allergen, instead of being injected, is administered into the oral cavity in a little squirt bottle or dropper bottle that's hooked over the lower arcade of teeth, and it squirts a little bit of that, just a couple of drops of a concentrated allergen solution that's then absorbed through the mucosal surfaces and has its effect this way. So the big advantage there is that it's needle-free. So if we have clients that are not comfortable with using needles, sublingual immunotherapy is a great option. In the trials we initially did with sublingual immunotherapy, we found it works just as frequently as injection immunotherapy. In newly diagnosed cases, in other words, animals where we've just diagnosed allergy and we want to try them on immunotherapy, we get a roundabout a 60% response. 2 out of 3 or so animals we find have a good response. And encouragingly, we have even treated pets that fail to respond to injections with sublingual immunotherapy. And we find that many of these animals, even if they don't respond to allergy shots, will respond to the allergy drops or sublingual treatment. And that's because there are some differences in the mechanism by which this SLIT therapy works. So if the owner is committed to using some kind of non-drug treatment, and as you say, immunotherapy is a real advantage, sublingual immunotherapy is really a viable option.
Well, boy, that's lots of stuff. It looks like getting good control of allergic skin disease is pretty complicated. And I know a lot of dermatologists use what they call multimodal therapy. I don't know, kind of wanted to have that magic bullet, the thing that makes everything all better.
Well, that's certainly what everybody would like, myself included, the magic bullet that's going to cure everyone. But because we know now that atopic dermatitis, allergic dermatitis, has a very complex pathogenesis, it's a multifactorial disease, it's really unreasonable to expect that one single therapy or treatment is going to be effective for every patient. So therapy is going to continue to be individualized for each patient. It's going to continue to be multimodal. We need to learn to combine all of our therapeutic options individually for each animal's skin disease to create the optimum effect. And I think we're very fortunate in some of these new drugs, new biological therapies, new diets are enabling more effective and safer long-term management of allergic patients.
Yeah, I think that's really exciting. This is such a frustrating skin condition for our clients and for veterinarians. It's great that there's still new things on that are on the go and trying to deal with that.
Thank you to Drs. DeBoer and Wayglass for sharing your time with us today. We really look forward to hearing about new advancements and products to treat allergic skin disease in veterinary medicine. And thank you to Hill's Pet Nutrition Canada for sponsoring this podcast. Thank you very much, everyone, for listening.